It's easy to take for granted the challenge of assembling the International Space Station at 17,500 miles per hour.
If it gets to space and it doesn't work, what do you do?
Next on the Rocket Ranch.
EGS program chief engineer, verify no constraints to launch.
3, 2, 1, and liftoff.
Welcome to space.
Amidst a flurry of new charges and ambitious goals for the future, we're taking a few episodes to reflect on some past accomplishments as we reach noteworthy milestones. Next month, we're celebrating the 50th anniversary of the first steps on the moon. For today, we're looking back at the Space Station Processing Facility, or SSPF, as it turns 25 years old this weekend. Charlie Quincy is currently focused on research related to making space livable for people as the Life Science Maturation Manager here at the Rocket Ranch. And being involved in various phases of the SSPF since before it even existed, he has a wealth of experience and knowledge to share. We sat down to talk about some history and a bit of the future at this quarter century milestone. All right, so I'm in the booth now with Charlie Quincy. Charlie, thanks for joining me today.
It's great to be here. I'm glad to talk about the SSPF and how it has progressed over the years.
Yeah, obviously we're going to dive in here to the Space Station Processing Facility in a minute, but I want to ask you a little bit about kind of what's your role today and kind of how did you get to this point in your career?
Well, I'm a advisor to Josie Burnett, the head of this ISS Research and Development Organization. I've gotten there over kind of a twisted road that have led me from a structural engineering beginning at KSC, designing launch pad equipment for space shuttle, through the environmental program, through the payload processing program, to the life sciences program, and then finally to a point where I'm kind of developing the plans for the next generation of activities that were going on at KSC.
So we're talking about SSPF, or Space Station Processing Facility, because we're celebrating the 25th anniversary this month. So a really exciting time. Thinking about you and your time, I think I heard you say you started with NASA back in 1977. Is that correct?
Actually, I started in the contracting world in 1977. I joined NASA in 1987 after the Challenger accident.
So going back to when you started, 1977, did you find similar excitement transitioning from the Apollo Soyuz to the shuttle program? What's that like? Kind of recount, like, what's the emotion? What's the feeling of preparing for the space shuttle?
It's almost identical. As a matter of fact, I had an opportunity to give Bob Crippen a tour out in the SSPF with a group of people that he was bringing through. And off to the side, I mentioned to him that I said, you know, it's a lot like right before John Young flew back in the day, that things are pretty exciting right now with the new boosters coming online, the new vehicles coming online, the crew capsules that we're bringing online, and the potential for building a gateway as an add-on to the space station and going back to the moon. I mean, things are really kind of rolling along pretty well right now for us as an agency, and I'm just happy to be part of it.
That's awesome. So thinking about the Space Station Processing Facility, so currently it sits in, well, for most of the more recent history, it sits in the line of three major buildings for the Kennedy Space Center. We've had the headquarters building, the operations and checkout building, and then the SSPF. And I know that before the SSPF stood in that space, it was used for some pretty cool historical activities. Can you talk a little bit about kind of what was that physical land used for?
Well, when I got here, it was beginning to be a bit overgrown, but that land and the building next to it, which is now the Engineering Development Laboratory, was actually a location where they had a number of the trainers that the astronauts used in preparations for their flights. They had an orbiter, a capsule simulator, a lander simulator. And then with the use of the buggy, they used to go out and actually drive on the land where the SSPF is now built with the moon buggy. So it has really some real historical significance to it. And it was one of the discussions they were having when it was originally sited back so many years ago that says, this is pretty hallowed ground. Do you really want to build this here? And the answer was a firm yes. That plan was developed And this is when I first got involved in the SSPF, was in the review of that plan that they had done. And based on the payload processing experiences I had had over the years, I was able to take a look at the plans, assess how you could actually operate in a building like this and make appropriate adjustments to the plan at this early stage, when it was just a bunch of drawings on a piece of paper, which is a lot easier than changing, you know, concrete and steel and the things that once it's built. So, and I think it worked out pretty well. They accepted many of the suggestions I had for them at the time, and then that was kind of the end of my involvement actually in SSPF for quite a number of years, because I had taken on a position with NASA to be the facility manager at the OPFs. Which was another processing facility.
The orbiting processing facilities. Yeah,
right. And it was a lot of fun out there. And some of the things we did were actually used in the construction period of the SSPF. The flooring in the SSPF is the same flooring we have in the OPFs for reasons that it's conductive, so you don't get static electricity buildup on it. It also allowed the operating of the air bearings in the SSPF without potentially dealing with the tile that they had originally planned for the floor.
So thinking about this being just another building, obviously you and I know that's not true. It's not just another building. So what, for those that haven't seen it, for those that don't know what this building is, why is it so special? What's kind of the makeup? If they came in and saw this facility, what are the things that you would show them?
Well, this building was set up so that you could have eight separate development activities going on in the high bay at the same time. And when I talk about a development activity, it's about the size of what can go into the orbiter.
So roughly the size of a school bus is kind of the analogy,
right,
that we give a lot of the time.
And then there were services that were provided to each one of these locations. And it also allowed you to connect one location to another, both electronically and in some cases even physically, piping-wise and things like that. So you could actually check out the interface performance between the two modules that were being prepared for flight, which was of a tremendously important, I mean, I can't overstate that, is that how important it is to be able to check these interfaces, because if it gets to space and it doesn't work, what do you do?
What do you do, Charlie? Like, are we bringing it home, or are we like...
Well, and that's one of the most beautiful things about the space station processing facility. It did enough testing, so we never actually had to bring a module home,
which is really good news. Well, unless we meant to. We did bring a couple home. Well, that were meant to be up for temporary purposes, right?
Well, we brought LDEF back, which was a station size activity, but we never really brought any of the main modules of the station back.
Awesome.
They went up there and they had been appropriately tested in preparation for flight, so that they really didn't have to come back. And that was, you know, the SSPF paid for itself in gold by making that. And I think in the future, as we build Gateway and some of the other things going to station, that's going to be a role that SSPF will have as the agency moves forward.
I know that for the SSPF high bay, it's not just kind of like a warehouse space. It's very specially designed for the purposes. In addition to things like the power and just services, it's also a really clean space. Is that true? And can you speak to, like, what does clean really mean?
Well, there's a lot of different ways to answer that question. One is temperature and humidity. It's controlled in that area very closely. It always has less than 50% humidity in it. It has the capability to raise the humidity level should it get too low, to keep static electricity from becoming a problem. It also has high filtration filters on it so that the dust particles are kept to a minimum. One of the things when you get into space flight is everything becomes weightless. All of the good stuff and all of the bad stuff. So you want to be able to manage the dust and debris that you bring to orbit just as much as you want to be able to manage the bigger elements, because they end up floating around and clogging up the filters in your air conditioning system.
About the space station being an international collaboration, did we see international partners bring in, like, their own modules into this space? Did everything kind of come through here, or did they kind of meet us on orbit?
Well, all the things that were launched through shuttle
okay.
came through here. Some of the things that were launched through the Russian or the Japanese or the European launch complexes did not come through Kennedy. But the big modules did come through Kennedy, and all the power trusses, the U.S. module, the Japanese Kibom module,
If you've seen the space station, we talk very proudly that it's roughly the size of a football field with its massive solar arrays and truss structures and all that, like you said, came through there. So had we not built the SSPF, what have we been using prior to that building? What else could we have possibly done to succeed the way we did?
Well, as I said, we had used the ONC building for Skylab. We had a vertical processing facility for doing some of the vertical payloads that were launched they were brought to the pad vertically and sorted into the orbiter vertically. All the things that for station were brought to the OPF and installed into the orbiter horizontally. So it would have been a similar process that as the ONC had. But the ONC had four processing locations. The SSPF has eight. So you can have a parallel path, and there could be a lot more things in preparation at that facility.
So again, kind of like we said, we're talking like eight school bus sized structures that you have power and all sorts of support systems to, that you can move around this space, connecting, disconnecting, testing. Really large space. And obviously, like, we need crane height as well, because they're moving things in and around each other. So a nice big space there. How critical is space station processing facility to the space station being completed?
The space station, in my opinion, wouldn't have been completed without the space station processing laboratory, because it is the logistics hub of which all of the components had to flow through to get there. It's an airport is not an airplane, but you can't get onto an airplane without going to the airport.
Sure. No, that's awesome.
And that's kind of the way we have to look at it, is say, okay, it was set up to make sure that everything came together, was tested in the configuration it needed to be tested in, and then packed and secured for insertion into the launch vehicle for delivery to space.
So is the SSPF just this big high bay space, or is there more to it even beyond the high bay structure where we have all these big pieces?
Well, the big pieces are the main function area, but there is a low bay area where racks are brought and built up and prepared in smaller areas. And then there's offline labs in and around the whole bay, where the smaller rack inserts are worked on by the science community, by the engineering community, by the technology community, in preparation for what's going to be put into the rack, which gets put into the module, which gets put into space.
Very cool. So we finished with the really massive structures for space station about a decade ago, I think.
Yes.
And we had a few other pieces we were taking up, kind of spares and backups and things, through the end of the shuttle program in 2011. So for the last 8 years, what has this facility been doing? Is it sitting? Is it functional? What's going on?
Well, it's still very functional. It's assumed a bit different a role. It's more of a place where spares are prepared for first station, where supplies are prepared for first station for consumables. It's also a place where we've been doing a lot of biological payload preparation for investigations to go on a station. And in some of the offline labs now, we're doing ground investigations that will enable us to potentially grow food on orbit to support exploration missions when nutrients and calories are more efficiently grown in place than packed and shipped along with the rest of the cargo.
And as we think about, again, kind of this time leading up till now, what's the current activity? What's kind of the latest and greatest for SSPF?
Well, the latest and greatest right now is we have, and from my knothole, which is the plant work, we have put two veggie units on station. We've put the advanced plant habitat on station. We've put the a brick LED module on station so that we can do very contained experiments. We're getting to ready to put a GFP image, or excuse me, a multi-spectrum imager on station so that we continually to understand what's happening biologically to things on station and incorporating the latest science tools for the science community into these pieces of hardware. That's been very effective in getting Kennedy Space Center identified as the food development center for the agency, and it's a role that the SSPF was really well suited to take on during this time frame. Now, will it stay that way forever? Probably not. I mean, one of the beautiful things about the facility, as it was designed, it's very adaptable to whatever the user community is currently needing. And that's kind of what we're looking in the future to say, as the different programs develop over the years, the changes that are made will be appropriate to what the needs are of the community.
So, naturally, I've got to ask, what do you all anticipate? Because obviously, you kind of mentioned your role is as an advisor now. I'm sure you're thinking about the future and mm-hmm. what's coming. So what do those conversations sound like and look like as far as who are you trying to either attract or just be ready for?
Well, you know, space exploration deals with different environments. On the ground, you can simulate a controlled environment system very well, and you can build things very closed and see how things do inside a very closed system. However, gravity exists on Earth.
Sure.
So you want to go to low Earth orbit to look at what is the gravity effect on things as they develop. Now, as we move further out into the deeper space regions, the radiation levels are going up, so you want to see what impact the increased radiation levels have on your biological systems. And then in an area that we don't know a lot about right now is magnetic fields.
Okay.
We live in a nice magnetic field.
Yeah, we sure do.
The compass always points north and south for us. But when you get out by the moon, that's not necessarily true. Mm-hmm. The magnetic fields of that area are not there. I mean, we've tried to pull centrifuges to get some understand some of the microgravity or partial gravity effects, but the moon will give us the first best opportunity to see 1/6 G in a very stable, long living environment. So these are the areas of science that I think are going to be the most fruitful from a biological system standpoint.
And so are you looking to...
And those are the things I'm trying to build the systems in place that will allow us to do those investigations.
Well, and that was my question of like, so is that really what you're trying to do of trying to create some sort of a infrastructure on Earth that will enable people to go do that?
And build the systems for station and build and identify the systems we would want to move out to Gateway, the systems we would want to have on the lunar surface, so that we can begin to kind of compare the data across all of those different environments and really begin to piece out the effect of each of the environments.
Yeah, people are undoubtedly, whether they're similar or not, they're going to draw comparisons between space station and Gateway. And so are you all having conversations about, hey, we're the space station processing facility. We can't see not playing a role in Gateway.
Well, I think Gateway is just an extension of I mean, if low Earth orbit is a laboratory, then a stable lunar orbit, it has to be a laboratory too, because the conditions are different in both locations. Mm. And so as we move further out, I think the role that the SSPF has had in low Earth orbit can be very easily expanded to the deep space environments.
And so are you all preparing to be ready to receive segments to Gateway to process them like you did with Space Station?
That's our hope that was, you know, the programs are still very much in the formative stages right now.
Sure.
We're back in 1986 again. You know? But I think in the long run, that's the way it will all come out. And, you know, I would suspect that as low Earth orbit becomes more commercialized, and the commercial community begins to bring things to low Earth orbit that the Space Station Processing Facility will become an important component of that activity also.
So right now we're flying a bunch of cargo and supplies and things to Space Station. Right now I think our main sources are the Northrop Grumman, Antares rocket. We have SpaceX's Cargo Dragon, and then we still have the Soyuz. And is there a fourth? I feel like the Japanese flying cargo to Space Station for us?
They're flying out of Japan.
Understood. Yes, yeah,
but we do ship things to Japan so the logistics component of bringing things out of our storages and moving it to Japan or to the various launch sites is an ongoing activity for us.
Yeah, that was my question of just like, so we have these four main capabilities of getting to Space Station today. So we are actively sending things to Virginia. Wallops is where where Northrop Grumman is flying, here at the Cape Canaveral Air Force Station with SpaceX, and then to Kazakhstan and then Japan as well. So we're shipping things overseas to get them to Space Station?
Yes. We're also preparing for the Sierra Nevada Dream Chaser, which will be another cargo deliverer to station, which will have a unique capability in that will actually land on the runway similar to the way the shuttle did, and we'll be able to get biological samples back into the laboratories much quicker than we are right now, and being much more analogous to where we were when we were bringing things back on shuttle.
So does that diverse capability make things better or more difficult in the long run? Because you're dealing with more diverse literally cargo ships, you're dealing with having to cross oceans to get things to the correct vehicle. So what's the general feeling of perspective on that?
I just think it's just people have accepted that as a way of doing business. I mean, this is a global, the building of station with the global community and processing it through the SSPF has made that community It's opened up that community to everybody, and we just feel like we're all kind of in the whole game together.
And do you feel like you're seeing that community grow? Are we seeing more people kind of getting interested and being able to have a vested interest in the laboratory in space?
I believe so. Sometimes it's hard to know exactly what's going on outside the gate.
You're busy.
Well, they're busy, and you always want to believe that you have the best activity and the best minds going. But the broader community is becoming very interested in what we're doing, and we have no problem developing partnerships in the broader community. So I think that's an indication that the community is very interested in what we're doing, and very supportive of what we're doing.
You kind of mentioned a little bit of your history in organizations. Seems like you've done a little bit of everything. Is there anything you haven't done yet that you really want to do?
No, but this is one of the more exciting times that Kennedy Space Center has had and the agency as a whole has had in quite a number of years. And I'm just excited to be here. And, you get to a point in your career where you say, well, I could retire, but do I really want to retire? I mean, this is what you live your whole life to do. And we're getting to plan out the next 25 or 30 years of activity right now, and that's exciting.
Awesome. Cool. Well, Charlie, thank you for joining me today. It was a pleasure getting to speak with you. Again, congrats to you and the entire team that has worked and is working in the SSPF 25 years. Here's to 25 more. It's really exciting stuff.
It really is, and we're very happy. Thank you.
The world of space exploration looks so different than it did in 1994. This facility promises to continue to play a critical role in our quest to return to the moon. I'm Joshua Santora, and that's our show. Thanks for stopping by the Rocket Ranch. And special thanks to our guest, Charlie Quincy. To learn more about space station activities, visit nasa.gov/station. For more on our quest to return to the moon, visit nasa.gov/moontomars. And to learn more about everything going on at the Kennedy Space Center, go to nasa.gov/Kennedy. Check out NASA's other podcasts to learn more about what's happening at all of our centers at nasa.gov/podcasts. A special shout out to our producer, John Sackman, our soundman, Lauren Maythrey, editor, Michelle Stone, and special thanks to Lee J. Lockhart. And remember, On the Rocket Ranch, even the sky isn't the limit.